this notion of content is a Gutenberg era idea, that we make a commodity that fills a product called a publication, a book, a newspaper, whatever. That's not where the value is. Content is now commodified. If we didn't know that already, thanks to the internet, for God's sakes, we should know that thanks to AI and generative AI, because making content ain't so special.
Velkommen indenfor i Maskinrum, AI i mediebranchen. Mit navn er Andreas Jarnberg, og med mig i det lille podcaststudie har jeg i dag
Peder Hammerskov.
Surprise! Som altid. Godt at se dig.
I lige med.
I dag skal det handle om medierne over for de store tech-virksomheder. Skal vi samarbejde med dem eller ej? Eller måske i virkeligheden opgøre med den tankegang, at der er et dem og et os?
Det er i hvert fald en af de vigtigste hovedpointer fra Jeff Jarvis, som er ham, vi skal møde i vores hovedsegment lige om lidt.
Men her kommer vi til. Allerførst en lille teaser for det, vi plejer at slutte med, nemlig en lille anbefaling. Lige inden vi gik ind i studiet her, Peder, der bookede vi jo et par billetter til en kommende AI-konference. Og vi skal ikke sige for meget, men i slutningen af maj er der en spændende konference, som du kan høre mere om til slut.
Ja, og det har noget at gøre med, at der er noget valg i år. Jeg siger ikke mere.
Jeg er ikke sige mere. Godt. Skiller. Bum. I den her episode skal det, som tidligere nævnt, handle om medierne over for de store tech-virksomheder. Og i dag, kort inden vi gik ind i det her lille podcaststudie, der skete der faktisk noget ret interessant, Peder.
Ja, i hvert fald, det var ikke sket lige inden vi gik ind i studiet, men i hvert fald så var det der, jeg læste det. Det er jo nyheder, der vist landede her i løbet af natten. Men altså, det er, at Financial Times, den store engelske avis, nu også har lavet en aftale med OpenAI, altså dem, der står bag ChatGPT, om at de godt må træne deres sprogmodeller på deres materiale, altså på Financial Times materiale. Og det vil så sige, at så folder de sig til rækken af de her medier, som giver dem adgang til det. I forvejen kender vi jo aftalen med Axel Springer, det store tyske mediekonglomerat, blandt andet udgiver Bild. Vi har AP, Associated Press, altså, og vi har Le Monde. Og så har vi en masse firmaer, der er i gang med at lave aftaler. Og det var egentlig også det, som New York Times var tilbage i december, da de jo så gik hårdt ud i de forhandlinger åbenbart, og endte med, at de så i stedet for lade sagen imod OpenAI. Men, og det ligger fuldstændig i tråd med det, vi skal tale om i dag. Fordi det, vi taler om i dag, det er jo Jeff Jarvis, har jeg haft ringet til via Zoom. Nej, det var via Teams, og han hader jo Teams. Jeg ved ikke hvorfor, men det gør han, men det kan vi også snakke om. Men vi har snakket sammen via Teams for ham til at forklare, hvad skal vi egentlig gøre med det her? Fordi han er modstander af det her med at se det som en kamp imellem tech-giganterne og medierne. Altså det dur ikke det der med at sige, nu skal vi bare ud og have en masse penge af dem, for at de kan bruge vores materiale. Han synes, det er en oldnordisk og en åndssvær måde at tænke på det på, og han siger jo, jamen det her med rettigheder på nyheder, det er jo det hele taget en fjollet ting, og det er en ny ting, der kom for 100 år siden. Lad os nu bare komme videre. Vi skal ikke se på os selv som nogen, der skal værne om en masse materiale, vi går og laver. Vi skal jo sørge for at rent faktisk opfylde det, vi sætter verden for, altså betjene de demokratier, vi fungerer i. Og hvis du er i tvivl om, hvem Jeff Jarvis han lige er, så kan jeg sige, at han de seneste 40 år har været en fremtrædende journalist, forfatter og professor i USA. Og han er nok bedst kendt for sit arbejde med at udforske den indflydelse, som digitaliseringen, internettet og nu AI har på medierne, offentligheden og journalistikken. Han har skrevet et hav af bøger om emnet og var indtil for nylig leder af Taunite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism på City University of New York. Og så var han også med på NAMS, altså Nordic AI Media Summit, her for en lille måneds tid siden. Og han lægger altså ud med sin pointe om, at vi er nødt til at finde ud af, hvordan vi kan samarbejde med de firmaer, der står bag for eksempel de store sprogmodeller.
The question should be, especially as AI comes, how can we work together with AI companies? We should, in the news industry, I think, be packaging news and current reliable content with an API. And conditions. Here's the deal. We'll make it easy for you to get current news, but we'll give you a key, but yes, there's a fee. And yes, this is how we must be credited. And that's an opportunity to negotiate that, especially in a time of fraught public relations around all of this, when the New York Times is suing OpenAI, and OpenAI is doing, I think, some pretty stupid deals with companies like Springer, which are only for the sake of PR. I think that smart media companies could come forward and say, we have a deal for you. We're going to help you deal with the problems you have. I hate that it's called hallucination. The machine doesn't lie. It doesn't know truth. But we're going to help you with current and reliable information, the ability to cite that. And here's news. Now the problem is going to be that Google says that somewhere around 2% of searches are for news. Facebook now says less than 1% or about 1% of its content is news. We think that everybody lives news, breathes news every minute of the day. They don't. They want a lot of other things. They don't want the news. But put that aside. I think that the one answer to this is that we try to work together. The other answer, and this is where I wrote a book called The Gutenberg Parenthesis, where I argue that this notion of content is a Gutenberg era idea, that we make a commodity that fills a product called a publication, a book, a newspaper, whatever. That's not where the value is. Content is now commodified. If we didn't know that already, thanks to the internet, for God's sakes, we should know that thanks to AI and generative AI, because making content ain't so special. That's not where the value resides. The value in journalism resides elsewhere. It resides in authority, in reporting, in answering questions, in the idea of service, in connecting communities. There's all kinds of other ways that we could find and bring value from the higher goals of journalism, not the idea that we manufacture a commodity called content.
Så altså det, Jeff Darvis siger her, det er altså, at vi som journalister og medier måske ikke så meget skal tænke på os selv som nogen, der skal lave indhold, der kan fylde sin avis, et website eller en podcast. Med fremkomsten af især generativ AI bliver det tydeligt, at det ikke er noget særligt at kunne lave indhold. Det særlige og værdien i journalistik ligger i at besvare spørgsmål, servicere og forbinde communities, altså have den her publicistiske rolle. Og det flugter jo faktisk en til en med nogle af de tanker, som David Caswell, en tidligere deltager her i podcasten, talte om i episode 5 fra NAMS, hvor han introducerede begrebet listening as a service. Og det er også en idé, som Jeff Jarvis køber ind i.
Before print, society was conversational. It was about listening and understanding how to judge people's authority based on what you knew about them. It was a social system. Even in the early days of print, print was still conversational. Erasmus and Sir Thomas More sent each other letters for their books to kind of freeze dry their conversation. The Pope and Luther got into conversation with their books and burnings of them. What changed was the industrialization and mechanization of print in the late 19th century. The factoid that fascinates me is that in the United States, before steam-powered presses and the linotype and so on, the average circulation of a daily newspaper in the U.S. was 4,000. It was the size of a good Substack newsletter, right? And I think that what the internet does is paradoxically, even though Google and Facebook are so huge, the internet brings us back down to a human scale, where a podcast, a newsletter, a blog ends up back at a human scale of interaction. And that then takes us back to the time before we couldn't listen. Mass media didn't let us listen because it was too big. It was impossible to. The only way we listened, air quotes, was letters to the editor and phone-in radio, and that was bullshit, right? So how do we get back to real listening? I started a program at the journalism school I've just left with my colleague Kerry Brown in engagement journalism. And we say all the time that what we teach is listening. Full stop.
Det er ifølge Jeff Jarvis vigtigt, at vi husker på, at generativ AI er en helt ny teknologi. Og når man ser tilbage på andre nye teknologier, som for eksempel trykpressen og internettet, så ved vi, at der sker en udvikling fra fascinationen af den teknologi, til vi reelt får glæde af den og finder ud af, hvordan vi i virkeligheden skal bruge den og kan bruge den.
It took a century and a half after movable type in Europe. Caveat, movable type existed in China and Korea before, but I'll start the clock with Gutenberg. From 1450 to 1600, before we saw a tremendous rush of innovation with print, that is to say, the invention of the modern novel with Cervantes, the invention of the essay with Montaigne, a market for printed plays with Shakespeare, and the newspaper. And what that says to me is, number one, we have time to figure out what this thing is. Number two, that it takes time for the technology and the technologists to fade into the woodwork and for others to come forward. And By the time of a few years this side of that of 1600, the technology was boring. It was familiar. It was known. Print, big deal. What was fascinating was what people chose to do with it, what they created with it. So I think the internet, predictably, we start by looking at it as a technology. And the technologists are in charge. And so one thing I say in my new book is that it's time to demote the geeks. And I argue in the book that the internet is not a technology, it is a human network. And we make the mistake of blaming the technology and the technologists for all of our ills in society. When the internet didn't make us hate, we brought our hate to the internet. One of the great researchers I quote happens to be from Denmark, Michael Bang Petersen, who says that we, you know, the internet didn't make us hate at all. And if we turned the internet off tomorrow, it wouldn't have any impact, that we brought that to us. And by the way, I should, since I'm now praising Denmark, I should mention that the Gutenberg parenthesis as a theory comes from three scholars at the University of Southern Denmark, Tom Pettit, Lars Ole Sauerberg, and Marianne Borch. So the brain trust for me is resident in Denmark. So if the internet is a human network, then what we need to do, what I try to do in the next book, is to separate out what are the faults of the technology, and there are some. What are the faults of us? Because we can't address the problems unless we deal with that. So we now have a book that's out now in the US that's driving me completely batshit, by a guy named Jonathan Haidt, who's a moral entrepreneur, moral panicker, blaming all the problems of teenagers today on their phones. Never mind that in the US you can go to school and get shot dead. Never mind that young women's bodily autonomy is taken away by our courts. Never mind the climate collapsing. Never mind that they can't see to afford a home in their lifetime. No, blame the phones. So that attitude of simple problem and simple solution gets us nowhere. So what I argue is we have to bring these other disciplines of study. We bring anthropology, sociology, religion, ethics, history, design, community studies, and so on, to the leadership of the internet. I was just re-watching something from Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, where he said straight out that we should stop training computer scientists. In my AI podcast at AIinside.show, we interviewed the CEO of a small AI company who said the most powerful programming language on planet Earth today is English, and soon other languages, including, I hope, Danish, Norwegian, and Swedish, and so on. And so I think that changes our view of all of that. So now AI certainly is a technology. There's no question about it. And it's a complex technology. What fascinates me about AI is that it is a reflection of humanity in a few ways. Number one, in that it spits back at us our own cliches and misapprehensions and the power of those who could publish in the past. It shows us also what is missing because of the people who didn't have the power to publish, point one. Point two, in our fears of it, we reveal our greater fears. And our hopes for it, we reveal our greater hopes. That's a reflection. And then number three, in how we choose to use it, what we ask it to do clearly reflects on us. Right? When Kevin Roos of the New York Times said that ChatGPT fell in love with him, well, he was saying much more about himself. There's a scholar who I quote in the next book who says that AI amounts to a reverse Turing test. It doesn't test the machine tests us. It's kind of lovely, huh? And so I think that if we try to look at AI now in that human context, we get much farther along. Now, we can go overboard. I just saw a paper that went up this week that asked whether anthropomorphization of AI makes people trust it more. And they found out, actually, it doesn't. So using verbs like think and say doesn't necessarily have an impact. I've got to read the paper in full, but that fascinated me. I'm reading a book right now, whose name I'm forgetting until I look it up, called Co-Intelligence by Ethan Mollick. I don't know what I think of it yet. I'm just at the beginning. But he argues that he's not arguing for anthropomorphization, but he does say that if we're going to use AI well, we should treat it as a human. I don't want to anthropomorphize it. I think it's wrong to say it hallucinates. It's wrong to say that it thinks. It's wrong to say that it writes or speaks or says or God knows believes. No, it's not sentient. Never will be. No, there is no such thing as artificial general intelligence, and there will not be. God damn it. That's the crazy AI boys who believe in these crazy philosophies of Tescrial. But having said that, he's not wrong in that the best way to manipulate the machine and get it to do what we want it to do is to feed it humanity, to feed back humanity. And that's the point, is it speaks our language now. It is the literate machine. So if we treat it with that understanding, and we know well what we're doing when we do it, we think more like humans and less like programmers.
Ja, hvis det var lidt svært at fange de her danske navne, som Jeff Jarvis han nævnte her, så var det altså Michael Bang-Petersen fra Aarhus Universitet og hans studie, der viste, at internettet ikke har skabt mere had. Og så var det de tre SDU-forskere, Marianne Børk, Thomas Petit og Lars Ole Sauerbergs arbejde fra midt-90'erne, som altså inspirerede Jeff Jarvis til hans bog The Gutenberg Parenthesis. Som lovet i starten af episoden her, så har vi jo igen en lille anbefaling. Og den her gang, der handler det altså om en event, man kan komme til, enten i København eller ude på internettet.
Simpelthen. Og vi har jo delt os, Peter, selvom vi bedst kan lide at være sammen.
Ja.
Du skal derover. Jeg tager det online. Og det er altså en konference, der hedder AI i det store valgår. Galt eller genialt?
Mm.
Det foregår den 27. maj. Det er i pressen JP Politikens Hus. Og omtalen lyder sådan her. I året 2024 har eller skal halvdelen af verdens befolkning i over 60 lande herunder USA, Indonesien, Indien, Mexico og EU til valg. Imens har vi set en markant udvikling i AI med værktøjer som ChatGPT, Midjourney, Gemini og Sora. Og med de teknologier opstår også en række dilemmaer i valgkampenes maskinrum.
Godt ord.
De sol- og skyggesider vil politikken og algoritmer, data og demokrati, ADD-projektet, stille skarpt på mandag den 27. Og det er altså klokken 16-18. Og der kan man få billetter online, eller man kan komme fysisk og være til stede. Og det koster 0 kroner.
Det lyder jo virkelig, virkelig spændende. Og det er jo, altså jeg tror virkelig, det er en vigtig, vigtig dagsorden at snakke om. Nu så vi jo lige her den anden dag, man kan synes, det er galt eller genialt. Altså Morten Messerschmidt og DF, der går ud og laver den her interessante kampagne, hvor de laver en deepfake med Mette Frederiksen, hvor hun sådan lidt tøhø-agtigt her oven på Stor Bidedag lige afskaffer julen, pinse og påske også. Ikke?
Det, jeg vil sige her i aften, vil få store konsekvenser for alle danskere. Efter vores succesfulde afskaffelse af Store Bededag, har regeringen nemlig besluttet at tage det næste skridt. Vi afskaffer pinsen, vi afskaffer påsken, og vi afskaffer julen.
Det har fået en spændende modtagelse. Jeg har selv været ude i Fagbladet Journalisten og sige, at jeg ikke synes, det er verdens bedste idé, fordi jeg synes faktisk, det er en rigtig dårlig idé, og det tror jeg, at de fleste er enige om. Men Messerschmidt og Kommunik forsvarer jo det her, ikke? Og siger, at det er jo bare satire. Men det er virkelig spændende, og jeg tror, at det her det kan blive et værre shitshow af et år i forhold til alle de muligheder, der ligger i at lave deepfakes og andet misinformation, disinformation ved hjælp af AI. Men det er spændende, og jeg glæder mig til at være med til den her event.
Spændende eksempel og en formentlig spændende konference. Og med disse ord, tak fordi I lyttede med. Vi lyttes ved.
Det gør vi.
Nu kommer der en vidighed lavet af AI. Er du klar?
Ja.
Hvad har Alexander den Store og Peter Plys til fælles?
Det er jeg ikke helt sikker på.
Samme mellemnavn.
No, the. Oh yeah, the great, the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Okay,
ja,
selvfølgelig.
Men jeg tror, der er røget noget i oversættelsen der.
Nå, ja. Okay. Altid.
Godt.
Tak for det. Det var super fedt segment.